You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, January 26, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, a recap of the final Democratic debate/forum before the first primary/caucus will be held of the 2016 presidential primary race. Also on the program, Planned Parenthood smear videographers in a move that surely has shocked them are indicted. Grand jury set up to investigate Planned Parenthood comes back with indictments of the two videographers who smeared them. This is in Texas, incidentally, folks. Also, Supreme Court, no lifetime without parole for juveniles. And it's retroactive. And the President of the United States banned solitary for juveniles in federal prisons and makes other executive action federal prison reforms. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders picking up a little support from African Americans and Latinos. Yes. Is it enough? Don't know yet. Meanwhile, the Rick Santorum campaign still exists.
Wow.
Yep. Have definitive proof it still exists.
A lot of
via Facebook.
I don't even know heart there, just delusion.
Yep. Meanwhile, Jeb Bush defends Flint Governor Rick Snyder. Michigan claims it doesn't have to listen to the EPA. And discovery from a civil action case, a bank shot, the civil action case that took place against the water department in Flint shows that Rick Snyder was told by his own appointees this river water is a no-go. And he reversed that decision. Why is it? And also, I should also say, I'm very excited about this, that Zephyr Teachout has announced her candidacy for New York's 19th district. That is up in, well, among other places, the Hudson area. So I'm very excited about that. We will talk about that. Meanwhile, there's a active shooter at the Navy Medical Center in San Diego. Unclear what's going on there, but, you know, it feels like it's been almost a week since we've had a active shooting during the show. So, We're going to go through the forum last night. I should warn you up front that Saul has been sick. Nikki is out of town. I have not had more than 20 minutes of continuous sleep in 2 days. Earache, fever. That's not me. That's him. Right. Yes.
Wow.
Michael's mocking the three-year-old. Not even three-year-old.
Not the three-year-old.
Oh, okay. Why don't you tell it to Saul? Every time he wakes up, I can't even hear you, Kelly. I don't know if that's because of the microphone or just because I'm semi-delirious.
No, I mean, you're here. I would be not here. So, but you're...
I believe me. It occurred to me. Then I would have to be at home with Saul. And...
Is he okay?
I finally got a babysitter. No, yeah, he seems to be now. I just got a text from, I finally was able to get a babysitter. We don't have a full-time babysitter, so it was, took some work. But now I'm getting pictures. I'm like, oh, he's eating pasta. He's fine. 2 days worth of a fever. Literally waking up every 20 minutes.
Just like, hey,
having
look,
nightmares.
Dad needed to go out and cover the
freaking
town hall.
He's waking up, going,
all right? I'm okay. Can we
he's
get
waking
some pasta?
Up and,
thank you.
And of course, I brought him into bed with me because he was waking up Myla in her room, or their room, I should say. And every 20 minutes, he wakes up and he's convinced someone's trying to take his truck.
Did you stop doing that?
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. Truth be told, I've been selling them on eBay. So I should also say that if you're watching on YouTube, you know that I am unshaven today. And that is because I'm so exhausted, I was afraid of taking anything that was sharp and putting it anywhere close to my face. But when I do shave, you know I'm shaving with my Harry's razors.
Best.
Yeah, both you guys now. Oh, I didn't want to say anything in front of Kelly. I didn't. Kelly didn't get one. It's not.
I'm okay with it.
All right. Because a lot of we've gotten emails from women who use it, obviously for, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. Legs, I assume. I don't
know.
What
are you talking about? Yeah.
People still shave their legs, right?
Yeah, women shave.
I don't know.
Incredible.
I'm not out there checking
portion of their
on a regular basis. No, I mean, I
good to know.
I'm
give yourself some.
I'm agnostic about
there.
That, but we've gotten emails from people
shave their arms now too.
All right.
So Harry's is like
suit yourself. I can tell
business.
You that from a face perspective, because that's all I shave. I mean, that's Harry's is the only company that has both amazing quality and low prices. Some places you can find low prices, but no quality. Some places, if you pay, I don't know, $100, you go one of those like shaving boutique stores that they have on the Upper West Side. But Harry's, both quality and the low price. They're German engineered 5-blade cartridges. Close, comfortable shave, no cuts or burn. Quality is guaranteed. You get a full refund if you're not happy. And they're factory direct prices. They ship right to your door for free. They sell their blades at half the price of leading brands. Over 1 million guys have already made the switch. Thousands more switch every day. Why are you going to pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half the price at harrys.com? The starter set is an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and 3 razor blades. And Harry doesn't like to give discounts because their prices obviously are more than reasonable. But Harry's will give you $5 off your first order with the promo code MajorityReport. Stop overpaying for a great shave. Start the new year off right. Go to harrys.com right now. That's Harry's, HARRYS.com. Enter code Majority Report at checkout. All right, let's get right to clips from last night. You know, it is really, and I think if you watched the forum, and I did in like literally 15-minute chunks over the course of, 7 hours. Because I was up until, 4 in the morning. Well, no, I was up throughout the night. But nevertheless, I was impressed. I thought everybody did well. That's a pretty good format for everyone up there. I think Peter Beinart on CNN at one point said, it's sort of like watching a slam dunk contest because there's nobody out there who's stopping them, right? They just get a chance to sort of show off. But I thought Bernie Sanders did a great job of really explaining the dynamics here. And as much as Chris Cuomo tried, unbelievable. But here's Chris Cuomo. Starting, this is the one thing that really drove me crazy. And he really forced the issue. Do we have the whole thing of the yes or no at this? Okay, because this is so dumb. It's basically Chris Cuomo saying, I'm going to give you a false narrative. Do you agree with it? Do you agree? Well, you'll listen to it. This is Chris Cuomo trying to pin Bernie down. Now, this is after Bernie has made it clear, and Chris Cuomo thought that he was drawing blood by getting Bernie Sanders to concede that his plan to have single-payer health care would raise taxes on the middle class and everyone. On the middle class, I think you would see it was about a 2% raise from the employee on payroll taxes, 6% on the employer, but those employers would obviously, but Bernie made it quite clear and did it very well. In fact, I think he used the same analogy that I used. $10,000 a year for health insurance, $5,000 increase in taxes, you have a net increase savings of $5,000. Now, for the average person, I think the tax increase would be closer to $4,100 under his plan. Nevertheless, he made that point very well. And of course, they just keep repeating, so you would raise taxes. Let me just add this. I remember doing I once did a video for Move On about Social Security. I know that's going to come as a shock to people. Where I went around, I think this must have been the time of privatizing Social Security. Maybe it was 2005. No, maybe it was 2008. I can't remember exactly when it was. And I distinctly remember a couple of respondents saying, not only do I not think we should raise taxes on the wealthy, we should raise taxes on all of us back to where it was, and even in the middle class. That was an uncontroversial thing to say 10 or so years ago. But it just goes to show you why it is so valuable for Republicans to get in and cut taxes, because it's really easy to change the conventional wisdom to say, well, this is the way it's always been. Bernie made the point during the forum last night. Our tax rate still is unprecedented in terms of, or nearly unprecedented in terms of being this low. And it's certainly near unprecedented in terms of how much our wage taxes captures in terms of the national income. But here is Chris Cuomo trying to pin Bernie down on whether he disagrees with Bill Clinton's notion of the era of big government is over. Whatever that means.
If you do a checklist of how you pay for everything, what you're doing is amassing the biggest government ever. After President Clinton said the era of big government was over, seems like Bernie Sanders is saying not only if it's over, I'm going to do it bigger than ever.
All right, we got to put what I am doing in context. And here's the context. Today in America, we have more income and wealth inequality than we have had since 1928. There has, Chris, been a massive transfer of wealth. I'm talking about trillions of dollars from the pockets of working families into the hands of the top 0.1%. That's a fact. So if you are telling me that at a time when Wall Street's
recklessness, greed, and illegal behavior brought this country to its knees, that I am going to say to them that they're going to have to start paying their fair share of taxes, fine. If that's the criticism, I accept it. I demand that Wall Street start paying its fair share of taxes. Second of all.
And what about the idea that you're bringing back the era of big government and making it bigger than ever?
Again, I believe, you know, and Iowa has played a very interesting role in the fight for public education. Mm-hmm. And for 100 plus years, what we have believed public education to be is up to the 12th grade. Free public education up to the 12th grade. Guess what? The world has changed. A college degree today is the equivalent of what a high school degree was 50 years ago. People want to criticize me, fine. I believe that every kid in this country who has the ability and the desire should be able to get a higher education regardless of the income of his family. And I will pay for that through attacks on Wall Street speculation.
They don't criticize the goal. They criticize the method of how you achieve it. Give me a yes or no on that. Is the era of big government back with President Sanders?
The era of protecting the middle class and working families is certainly something that I will make happen.
Now, I've got a news flash for CNN host Chris Cuomo. In the year 1990, approximately a year or two early than Bill Clinton had declared the era of big government over, there was approximately 250 million people in this country. Now there's approximately, what, 320 million people in this country? That may explain why we would see unprecedented. How is it that possible that the government could be bigger now? Lost over a million, or close to a million government jobs just in the past eight years. I'm not even sure what this means, the big government. Is it a per capita spending? Is it based on taxation? Is it based on how many people are enrolled in public schools? Would Chris Cuomo have said, this whole Medicare thing, are we expanding the size of government? Maybe. Maybe he would have. But it's just a dumb question. Forcing Bernie Sanders to accept a frame that is not helpful to anybody. It's nothing. It's basically like trying to get Bernie Sanders to answer a question about, like, you know, the word Democrat. Like, do you think we could use this as an adjective? Democrat. Here is Bernie Sanders. And for a while, we've been saying that Bernie Sanders really needs to challenge Hillary Clinton to show the differences between his agenda and hers. And here is a good example of him trying to do that. Now, of course, I guess Chris Cuomo couldn't break free from, I mean, it would have been an interesting thing to, I mean, just from a TV perspective, if he had taken Bernie Sanders' advice here. But here is Bernie Sanders answering a young woman's question about Social Security in the context of why Bernie Sanders thinks that he would be helpful to women, or more helpful to women than a woman who is running. And this woman was not talking about Carly Fiorina, I should say. She was talking about Hillary Clinton. Because that doesn't apply to Carly Fiorina. I think everybody would, at least, you know,
there's actually an official response to that from Carly Fiorina. Which
is there really? No.
Which is, she was absolutely talking about Carly Fiorina.
Right.
I know this.
Right. All right, here's Bernie Sanders.
More than men as we raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
All right. So
one more point. One more point, Chris. I'm trying to win her vote. Leave me alone here. I'm trying to. All right.
Hillary Clinton and I have a disagreement on a very important issue that impacts everybody, but especially women. I believe that we should expand Social Security benefits by lifting the cap on taxable income. That will help millions of low-income seniors, especially women. Ask Hillary Clinton if she's prepared to lift the cap on taxable income.
All right, Alexis.
Now, that type of thing, there should have been more of that by Bernie Sanders in the prior and earlier forums. Lay down markers, dare her to cross, because at the very least, what Bernie Sanders is trying to do is to pull Clinton and to pull the center of the Democratic Party to the left and to get the major candidates, all the candidates, really, who are running for president in the Democratic Party to pledge. Now, they may or may not be able to do it, but to hold that position, very important. Very important. We saw the significance of the symbolic vote by the Senate in terms of shutting down President Obama's earlier bids to cut Social Security. They wanted to expand it. Was it binding? No. Did it make it politically difficult for any Democrat to take any other position? Yes. Finally, here is Bernie Sanders asked what his parents would think if they could see his campaign before giving his closing remarks. You know, one of the things that people have talked about, because, you know, we're moving into the stage now of the arguments about Sanders and Clinton deal with electability in the general. And one of the knocks on Bernie Sanders is that he was too curmudgeonly and not warm enough. And I think last night there was you heard that exchange with Chris Cuomo where he says, you know, basically, shut up, Chris, trying to win this person's vote. People laughed. I think a lot of people also enjoyed the fact that Chris was asked to shut up.
Yeah, they're that was right. Probably 70% of it.
78%.
A lot of my great heroes, such as Joseph Stalin, had very warm personalities.
Here's,
they didn't call him Uncle Joe for nothing.
Here is Bernie asked about his parents.
Something else your brother said. He got emotional. He was saying, boy, would our parents be proud of the success that Bernie has had. You have to think about that as well. When you think about why you're doing this and what it means, what does it mean to you about what your parents would think if they saw you now?
That they wouldn't believe it. I mean, we grew up, my dad came from Poland at the age of 17 without a nickel in his pocket, couldn't speak English, and he never made a whole lot of money. And my brother and I and mom and dad grew up in a 3.5-room rent-controlled apartment in Brooklyn, New York. And we never had a whole lot of money. And if you ask me, you know, Chris, this would be so unimaginable. The fact that I'm a United States senator would have been beyond really anything that they would have thought possible. The fact that I am running for president of the United States, you know, I do think about it. And, you know, I think they're very proud. But it's certainly something that I don't think they ever believed would have happened.
You got 30 seconds. Tell the voters of Iowa what you want them to know.
Look, Hillary Clinton is a very good person. Martin O'Malley is a very decent guy. So I'm not, you know, this is not a personal stuff. It just seems to me that the crises that we face as a country today, and we didn't even get into climate change to a significant degree, inequality, poverty in America, an obscene and unfair campaign finance system, these problems are so serious that we have got to go beyond establishment politics and establishment economics. In my view, we need a political revolution where millions of people stand up and say, you know what, that great government of ours belongs to all of us, not just the few. That's why I'm running for president. Thank you.
Senator Sanders, thank you.
And so that was Sanders' closing argument in Iowa. And Let's talk about some of Hillary's key points. And look, you know, I think in one part where Hillary really did well was responding to a question about Islamophobia from a young Muslim woman. And this was really strong. And, you know, you project out to the general election. And we, you know, obviously we don't know who the candidates are going to be on either side at this point. And you can't, it's very difficult to cast your ballot in that way. But so much of this is about electability, it seems to me, that the argument is coming down to it. Or at least that's what I notice. Maybe that issue hasn't even been raised in the context of a lot of voters' minds yet. They simply know Hillary Clinton more than Bernie Sanders. Obviously, a big part of it is also Hillary Clinton would be the first female president. That is monumentous and important. Obviously, it's not just that. It's whether or not she crosses a certain baseline for us as people of the left as to whether or not she crosses that sort of baseline of being, you know, that makes her different from Carly Fiorina. But here she is responding to a question about Islamophobia. I think it's one of her best moments in the evening. This is number six.
Specifically, as a mother of three young children, as an American Muslim, how can I make sure that this country is the best place on earth to raise my family?
Thank you. Thank you for your service in the military.
It's my pleasure.
Pause.
And one of the...
All right, we should say that she is... an Air Force, she serves in the Air Force, three children. And of course, we know that as soon as Hillary Clinton doesn't demand that this woman leave the audience, we know that she is at least a regressive, according to a lot of non-regressive liberals out there.
Shocking lack of thought experiments in this exchange.
It's
it was a little stunning. Bit just sort of insulting as in to the audience, right. Frankly.
I mean, but nevertheless, let's hear what she had to say.
One of the most distressing aspects of this campaign has been the language of Republican candidates, particularly their front runner, that insults, demeans, denigrates different people. He has cast a wide net. He started with Mexicans. He's currently on Muslims. But I found it particularly harmful the way that he has talked about Muslims, American Muslims and Muslims around the world. And I've called him out continuously about that. It's not only shameful and contrary to our values to say that people of a certain religion should never come to this country, or to claim that there are no real people of the Muslim faith who share our values, and to have the kind of dismissive and insulting approach. It's not only shameful and offensive, which it is. I think it's dangerous, and it's dangerous in several ways. It's dangerous because American Muslims deserve better, and now their children and they are the target of Islamophobia, of threats. I've met a number of parents who have said their children are afraid to go to school because they are worried about how they will be treated, and we cannot tolerate this, and we must stand up and say, every person in this country deserves to be treated with respect.
I thought that was pretty impressive for a regressive.
I have a thought experiment about pulling off a girl's hijab at school. No, don't be intellectually dishonest and take what I've said out of context. Take a girl who has a hijab. She would be more likely to support ISIS. Is that correct? And if you were to not pull her turban off, in a sense,
she would
really
clearly
anti-feminist.
Be more likely to support ISIS than someone who is wearing, let's say, a nun's habit.
Yes. No. Nope.
Is that not correct? Yeah. I mean, is that in any way
say
refutable
somebody
by
was
logic?
Wearing a 30 Rock T-shirt, ironically, versus someone who is wearing a Pakistani headscarf. Think about it. Use logic. This is the problem with the regressive left: is you can't rip off teenage girls' hijabs anymore. Humiliate them in public. And this is why we're going to have Donald Trump as president.
That's right. Because of the vacuum that is being created by regressive leftists who allow for your major candidates to not criticize her for promoting ISIS that way.
No, it's really quite disconcerting. I was so
Why
upset.
Would we allow that woman in the U.S. Air Force? There is a nun who wants to join the Air Force who can't now.
And there were definitely guys watching that debate who were just like, I'll tell you what, man, I was going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but I just feel like she can't speak honestly on the Islam issue. I'm going to vote for Trump.
The problem is,
because she was real regressive about that. She wasn't speaking honestly.
Those regressive liberals are creating such a vacuum that I am literally sucked through the television into a Trump rally.
So where's the courage? Where's the Ayn Hirsch Ali's out there? You know, I mean, from my perspective, you could just speak honestly. Then we could do something different. But until that point, I'm going to support burned down mosques. And it's because of the regressive left. When Hillary Clinton said that lady and her kids should be respected, I felt no choice but to shoot paintballs.
Let me ask you a question. Are you familiar with Pascal's wager?
Well, you're using a straw man. I never said that. I talked about burning down a specific mosque, not all the mosques. See how they do that?
Okay, riddle me this. You are, there is a clear situation where someone has been kidnapped. We have video recordings of this perpetrator putting a child in a well. She has 7 hours to live. Do you torture her? You can't answer that question. Okay, that's why I'm voting for Trump.
Riddle me this. Have you seen 24?
Okay.
No? Fine, I'm voting for Cruz.
There you go.
Ben Carson speaks more sensibly on foreign policy than Noam Chomsky.
Shouldn't have left experiment. Shouldn't left a vacuum of...
All right, we're getting a little bit off topic here. Slightly.
Well, we haven't covered that for a while.
It's fun. True. It is true, and it's so fun.
All right, here is the Hillary Clinton has a bit of a dilemma, and it's not. Let me make it clear. I think that if I were Bernie Sanders at this point, I would rather have Hillary Clinton's set of dilemmas than Bernie Sanders' set of dilemmas, just on sheer numbers. Okay, at this point, and the dilemma is that she is making the argument that she is more qualified to be president. She is making the argument that she has more experience that is suited for the presidency. And it's pretty hard to argue with that. I think she lived in the White House and was the closest confidant to a president for 8 years. She has served in another president's administration as Secretary of State. She has served in the U.S. Senate. She has been First Lady of a state and has seen the administration of that state. I mean, her firsthand experience of what it would take to be president is close to being unrivaled. George Herbert Walker Bush comes to mind as someone who also probably had
similar experience as a vice president, as the head of the CIA, as a congressman, as the son of a senator, and as, you know, a changeling or whatever.
Shape-shifting
changing lizard.
Yes.
But the one problem with her argument that will not go away is that despite all the experience that she boasts, she has to explain away what many consider to be a, well, I think everyone considers to be a mistake on what many consider to be the greatest foreign policy blunder, and I think that understates it, of the modern era by this country, and that is Iraq. Here is her attempt to respond to that criticism. And in some ways, it's somewhat effective, not necessarily in my mind, but I think it resonates with some people. This is number five.
Your critics will say they see the Obama administration, of which you were, of course, a part of, mm-hmm. Secretary of State, as a period where now things are less stable around the world, certainly in the war on terror. Specifically, Senator Sanders earlier tonight said, yes, a lot of experience, but it doesn't always translate into the best judgment. And he cited your vote on the war in Iraq. How do you respond to those two criticisms?
Well, first of all, I have a much longer history than one vote, which I've said was a mistake because of the way that that was done and how the Bush administration handled it. But I think the American public has seen me exercising judgment in a lot of other ways. And in fact, when that hard primary campaign was over and I went to work for President Obama and he ended up asking me to be Secretary of State, it was because he trusted my judgment. And we worked side by side over those 4 years. And think about where we were when he became president. As I just said, Iran on the way to a nuclear weapon, which would have destabilized the entire Middle East, created an arms race, the likes of which we have never seen. We had hundreds of thousands of American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Our best allies and friends in Europe and Asia were really put out with us because of the way they'd been treated by the Bush administration. And were very skeptical that the United States was a good ally any longer and wanted to lead the world toward peace, prosperity, and security. I spent so much of my time getting back the confidence and the trust of our friends and allies around the world. So I think we made a lot of progress. Now, do we have a terrorist threat? Yes, we had a terrorist threat on 9/11 before President Obama took office. Yes, we were attacked. So this is not something new. This is a long-term challenge. That's why I've laid out a plan to defeat ISIS and the radical jihadist terrorist networks that I think has the best chance of achieving that. There is no time in human history where everything is going well. And we now live in a very interconnected world where we know everything that is going on and where people look to the United States to help. So we have to be leading, and that means we've got to be smart about how we try to assert our power so that it is constructive, makes a difference, and does lead to greater peace and prosperity. But I am very proud of my record as Secretary of State and what we accomplished, not only on specific trouble spots, but advancing women's rights, advancing gay rights, advancing religious freedom, internet freedom, and so many of the other values that we hold dear.
So this is the benefit of being, and it gives you a sense of why the Clinton campaign signed off on this last-minute Democratic forum before Iowa. This was not scheduled, right? This just cropped up. And it gives you the sense of why they probably wouldn't have okayed a debate. Because this is the big chink in the armor for her in terms of foreign policy and largely her experience, right? Because this is the 3 a.m. call. theme. And on one hand, she sort of blames the Bush administration for doing stuff wrong, but neglects to mention that she, or just says, I made a mistake in giving them authorization to do all these things wrong. She says, I have been working to regain their trust for a thing in which she contributed to diminish our trust. Then she goes on to say that she's got a plan to defeat ISIS, a function of the Iraq war, that is distinct from, presumably, right, the Obama administration's, who she relies on to say that his trust in me exonerates me in some level from that mistake. And then she goes on to basically say, like, look, people look to us. She reiterates, I mean, if you break down what she's saying there, she's saying, I am still pretty ready to intervene in places around the world in a way that I clearly was when I voted for the Iraq war. And, I mean, I presume Chris Cuomo understood what she was saying, but that may be giving him too much of the benefit of the doubt. He perceived his job to just basically tee them up and let them go.
Well, unless it was like Maoist or Stalinist.
Right, right.
Government controls every single facet of our lives, or you still won't have cameras in your bedroom.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing with Hillary Clinton is she's obviously really smart. She obviously has a lot of experience, but it doesn't seem like the underlying thinking never seems sound to me. Like, there's a lot of, in terms of foreign policy, there's a lot of verbiage. There's a lot of, like, I did this, I understand that, I interacted with these people, well, this problem.
She has a different idea of what America should be doing, probably, than you.
In some ways, but I also don't think that there's other people who I have different ideas from who I think have learned, maybe. Like, I think a guy like John Kerry seems a little bit more adoptive in his outlook than her.
Well, I mean, I think John Kerry took that vote because he was politically cowardly.
Definitely.
I think Hillary Clinton took that vote because she's a hawk.
Right, right.
And when she's talking about, even in responding to that question, still making it clear, I am still all for intervention, that the problem was that was not the idea that we were too aggressive in going after Saddam Hussein and giving the Bush administration authorization, that it was the Bush administration did the wrong thing with that authorization.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, but I don't know how well she answered that question, but she still feels compelled by the end of that answer to say, look, people look to us and we have a responsibility. But we have to assert our power.
Right. Right. That is her worldview. But I think it was also reflected. We talked about Syria recently and how her position has migrated to one that there does need to be some type of negotiated settlement there. And I just think that, I'm not really contradicting what you're saying. She has a very hawkish instinct, and it is a little bit alarming that there are so many instances of it not working out that hasn't led her to reevaluate in certain ways that you would think would be not really required. Like, John Kerry hasn't become a radical leftist in foreign policy at all. But he has probably become a bit more realist or given into that instinct more. And she doesn't appear to have done that much.
Well, I mean, let's remember where John Kerry started on the public stage, right? I mean, who's going to be the last guy to die in Vietnam?
Sure, sure, sure. But as a senator, I mean, he was, you know, in addition.
Well, he voted against the first Iraq invasion.
That one would make more sense than the second one. But I'm just saying, regardless, he seems to have learned from those, or I guess what you're saying is he just is not giving in to political cowardice anymore on foreign policy issues.
Well, I mean, he's not running for re-election. Right, I mean, right, I think he has more latitude.
Right.
And let's be honest, to the extent that President Obama was constricted by the perception of an angry black man.
Goddamn right.
Hillary Clinton, and look, this can go two different ways, right? There could be a consciousness that I can't be the angry black man. Or it could just be like, it's my nature to not be the angry black man. That's why I'm here. And it could very well be that Hillary Clinton, it has to be conscious of there is a, there's misogyny is real. There's a perception out there that women are weak, that, you know, a good chunk of our nation needs an authoritarian daddy. So I'm going to have to project some measure of authoritarian daddy here. Or it could just be that she's in this situation because she is got a good chunk of authoritarian daddy in her. Or, you know, that interventionist inclination is just founded in who she is. Nevertheless, I, you know, personally, I see that as a problem. I'm not sure the rest of America does. All right, let's just round this out, and then we'll head into the fun half, because there's a piece by Goldie Taylor about Bernie Sanders in South Carolina that I think is important. There's also a poll out by Quinnipiac that I don't know if it quite reinforces what I've been saying about why I think Trump may underperform his numbers in Iowa, which is that much of Trump's support in Iowa comes from people who have never attended the caucuses. Cruz's support, he leads by, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 percentage points of people who have attended caucuses before. But with that said, today Donald Trump got an endorsement from Jerry Falwell Jr. of Liberty University. And I would say the chances of Donald Trump, it not becoming clear that Donald Trump has contributed to the endowment of Liberty University in some fashion, or is going to have a Trump student center or a Trump chapel there. Lined
Trump
with
Trump chapel. It's great. It's great. It's fantastic.
Lined with, you know, outfitted with fur-lined urinals. And I think it's, I would say the chances of that are quite high. Nevertheless, that's going to help him in Iowa. We'll see by how much. But, and I think the fact that he doesn't have those, the other thing we'll talk about hopefully in the, we get there in the fun half, is that all of this sort of establishment players that are coming out and saying better Trump than Cruz, I've been hearing, and this is, I don't know how true it is, but that part of this is driven by Jeb Bush, who's looking to clear the field in some fashion.
I guess I'm a little bit more wily than people had given me credit for.
Well, it's ISO, right? I mean, it's
well, that's the game that's from the game that the black guys play.
Well, basketball, like you
right.
Isolate
no, black
somebody,
guys play that game mostly.
He wants to isolate himself with Trump, and if Trump can clear the field, then he's in good shape. But here's interesting, in getting back to the Democratic race, and I, with all due respect to Martin O'Malley's fan or fans, somebody,
poor guy,
somebody tweeted me that after the show yesterday or the other day.
Actually, if anybody supports him, I would love to, that'd be great to get an IM or something. If there's any member of our
genuine.
No, yeah, not a joke. There's like someone who's on board for Martin O'Malley for real.
But it's interesting the way he responds to this. Because if I'm Martin O'Malley, I don't even think I want to say that I think I have a chance in Iowa, because I would think that most rational people would say, this guy's out of his mind, right? So it's interesting that he says this, because he must know that. Number four, he's asked why he's the better candidate than Sanders or Clinton. Listen to what he says.
So to those that are still, you know, undecided like me, or maybe just less informed about politics.
Pause it.
On top of,
I should say this is an audience question.
What you've already talked about, what's the last thing that you would try to tell them to convince them that you are, in fact, the best candidate for the Democratic Party?
Okay, thank you.
This is what I would say. I would say that time and time again in the history of the state of Iowa, Iowa has found a way to sort through the noise and to sort through the national polls and to lift up a new leader for our country at times when that was critical and essential. That's what you did 8 years ago when you lifted up Barack Obama to lead our country forward. And we need to build upon his good work by continuing to move forward. And I am the only one of the three of us who has a track record, not of being a divider, but of bringing people together to get meaningful things done, raising the living wage, making college more affordable, creating jobs, healing wounds and divisions. That's what our country needs right now. We are a great people. We are a generous and we are a compassionate people. And we are far better than the sort of fascist rhetoric that you hear spewed out by Donald Trump. The enduring symbol of our country is not the barbed wire fence. It is the Statue of Liberty. And we... And so I'm not here to praise you, Iowa. I'm here to challenge you. Lift up a new leader because you can change the course of this presidential race. You can shift this dynamic on caucus night. I know you can. I've seen you do it before. There is nothing so divided about our national politics that it cannot be healed with a renewed faith in one another and new leadership. That's what I have to offer. My candidacy is in your hands. Do with it as you will. But I think it's important in order to move our country forward that once again Iowa lift up a new leader so that we can make America the compassionate, generous, and inclusive place that we need it to be. Thanks.
So he wants Iowa to lift up a new leader. Give him a little bit of
A for effort.
Yeah. Really strong pitch, I think, for him as vice president. Right?
Homeland security.
I don't know.
Type of
there was
job.
A lot of like, he was really, there was a grab bag of stuff in there. Like, he almost started sounding like religious. There was a lot of, there was a lot of religious buzzwords in there.
I heard a touch of.
Well, just even lifting up a new leader. Is a sort of a religious construction.
Yeah, he can speak in that vein pretty well. I thought it'd be better for him in the polls than it has proven to be, but
that it's set off Matt's, right?
Well, I thought it was interesting the way he kept saying to bring up a new leader. Like, okay, he's the youngest guy, so obviously he could mean him. But the way he said like keep him ready for caucus night or whatever. It felt like maybe he's teeing himself up to like throw a support behind somebody. Maybe not Hillary Clinton because he mentioned how Iowa chose a new leader in 2008.
There you go.
That's interesting. I actually just sort of zone out when he speaks. Generally, I don't even mean it like in a bad. He's not saying anything bad or anything. I just don't focus.
That's how I got Saul to go to sleep last night.
You play some O'Malley?
Yeah.
And then he goes, and spewing fascist stuff, and then Saul goes,
well, I think to a certain extent, you know, he's saying that fascist stuff because, I mean, that's the thing about what he said there. You know, he is like, it sounded to me like he's saying, like, look, whatever you think you need for in a VP, I can be that guy. I can do a little bit of the religious stuff. I can be a little bit of the attack dog. I can be a new generation. I can be a healer. I can heal people.
I can play acoustic guitar.
Imagine I could just see him begging. That'd be a funny bit of him begging Bernie, and Bernie's just like, oh, no, Martin. I've already told you, you're a very nice young man. Frankly, you get under my skin. You're annoying, and I can't focus on you. I'm 76. I can barely keep awake to speak to begin with. I need to be enraged, exhausted.
The only thing that was missing from that that closing argument was like, I can also be very quiet on a bus.
And now for my talent portion.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, in the fun half, we'll have Jeb Bush explaining that he is a horrible human being and or knows nothing about what's going on in Michigan.
I don't think it's a, yeah, there's no contradiction.
We'll have Chris Christie explaining that he's an even worse human being, and
yeah,
as much of as desperate as he is to stay in this race, so as to give himself some leverage on this investigations that are still ongoing in New Jersey, he can't help himself but to be a huge, huge a-hole. Then we will have sound of what we've tried to confirm this, and I think it is real, of an Oregon militiaman who is at the, you know, the camp up there, wearing a massive, well, it's, I mean, it looks like a diaper, but it's not. I mean, it's a sumo wrestling gear. He is a sumo wrestling champion, I think, in this country. Pretending, challenging Chris Christie by pretending he's Chris Christie's brother as a way of mocking. I can't explain it to you, ladies and gentlemen. And then we'll have a statement from Rick Santorum explaining how he is going to pull this out, and a flashback to Rick Santorum, because we may not have him anymore. All that and more in the fun half of the program, as well as this Planned Parenthood exoneration, at least by this grand jury, and indictment of the videographers. They could face up to 20 years in jail.
It's beyond exoneration.
That seems like it would be extreme, but I think, you know, a couple of years might be nice for them.
We can't cut them off a nickel, you know? What are you going to do?
I'll give them two or three. Minimum security.
Well, 5 years minimum security. It's character building.
Yeah, no, this is going to be great.
You won't do any more stupid videos anymore.
Well, no, it'd be a great time to learn some new editing software or... All right, let's take a quick break. Just a reminder, this program exists because of our members. We are member-supported by almost 98.3%. I haven't seen what the latest figures are. Kelly's doing the breakdown on the spreadsheets and the X11 computer that we have in the basement of our operation here has been down for a while, so we can't do any of the supercomputing that we need to do. But the point is, folks, it is your membership that make this show possible. And as a thank you, we say, here's another 50 minutes a day. Sometimes it's more. Sometimes it's a little bit less. Today, maybe less. I don't know. I get my second wind. I'm going to be exhausted when this is over. Join themajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Or if you buy crap from jet.com and want to know more about jet.com, head over to majorityreportkickback.com. We've got an affiliate link with jet.com. You can buy without necessarily the same feelings about Amazon that some people have based upon some facts about Amazon. All right, we'll be right back after this. 646-257-3920. You can IM me via the app. Thursday night, just a reminder, final GOP debate before Iowa. If Donald Trump does it, we're going to do it.
It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be great. It's great. It's great. It's going to be great. Megyn Kelly should treat him with respect, though.
He needs respect.
Yeah, he needs respect.
We'll be right back after this.